Okay, I think it's time, so let's get started. First item for today, if you would like to follow my slides on your device, laptop, mobile device, whatever, you could just visit that link or scan the QR code for lazy folks out there. So those are hosted on GitHub. So it'll give you another 10 seconds, more or less. If not, you can always visit them later. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Seems like everyone is set. Okay. Topic for today is Ceph, and today I would like to give you an update on, in particular, what's new in Ceph. And with new in Ceph, I mean with the latest release, which is called Nautilus. My name is Kai. I work for SUSE. And if you have any questions, reach out by mail, grab me in the hallway, reach out on Twitter, wherever. Everything is fine. We have a lot of things we're going to talk about today. First of all, quick introduction into Ceph. Just that everyone is aware, this is not what is Ceph, what is an object storage talk at all. This is really focused on the new features in Ceph. So if you're expecting a, I don't know, a complete bottom line talk about Ceph, that's not what I'm going to talk about, just to set the stage here. Nevertheless, that's the only absolute basic picture and slide that I have. I expect everyone has seen that already. Please raise your hand if you have seen that picture already and you're aware of what this is all about. At least half of you, so I will explain it really quickly. This just shows and visualize the Ceph architecture more or less. Underneath, you have the Rados layer, which is a reliable, autonomous, distributed object storage. That's what it stands for. As easy as it could be understood, that's where all your data is replicated and the brain of it relies. And on top of it, we have right now four different ways how we can access our data, because we would like to store some data in the cluster and we would like to get data out of the cluster. So we have four different ways. To the left here, that's libRados. That's a library you could use to place stuff in Ceph cluster or to get out of it. You can use, I don't know, almost any language like C, C++, Python. So choose your poison, I would say. Second thing is the Rados gateway, which is a REST gateway, which works similar to S3 and Swift. So for those of you who are familiar with AWS and S3 there, that's more or less how it works. We have RBD, which is a replicated block device. This is used for mainly virtual machines. So that's a block device that could be put underneath a virtual machine. And also RBDs are used, for example, if you put on top an iSCSI gateway to expose this LAN to a third node, you would use an RBD, which is nothing less than just a block device. And last but not least, I think it's stable since, not quite sure, I think Luminous, if I'm not mistaken, it's CephFS. That's a POSIX-compliant file system, which is put on Ceph. So there's no need to have an NFS gateway, for example, in between, or Samba gateway, using an RBD, for example, formatting it and then exporting it to clients. You can directly use CephFS, which is much more performant and much better. So that's enough for the introduction. Let's get to where we are right now. First, an overview. Luminous was released in 2017, then Mimic in May 2018, and we are already post-Nautilus. Nautilus was released in March 2019. As you can see already, we're right now on a 9-month release cadence, and we support a ±2 upgrade of it. So let's say if you're still on a Luminous release, you can upgrade directly to Nautilus, or if you're already on a Mimic release, you can then jump over Nautilus directly to Octopus once it's released. The current release cadence is under a heavy debate. I just added a link. Don't get confused. This one is redirecting you to Twitter, where they started a survey last weekend during the FollowCon to ask the audience if we should may switch back to a 12-month release cadence instead of a 9-month release cadence. So please make use of it. I would like to switch to a 12-month release cadence again. Seth, just that you're aware, have some, or I would call principles, you can also call them themes in the meanwhile, five of them. First of all, usability. Seth, as you're aware, hopefully, or if you tried it already, you found it out yourself, it's rather complex to set up and also to administer and to manage. So one way to make it easier to consume, for example, with this orchestrator API I'm going to talk later, and also to develop some upgrade automation around it. Quality is the next big topic here. Quality means we're trying to collect crash reports, we have some telemetry module in the meanwhile in place, together with better documentation and test suite. Performance, obviously, everyone wants more performance. To be honest, it's rather easy to get more I/O out of a Ceph cluster, just add more hardware to it. That's how it works. So if you need more I/O, just add more hardware. It's as easy as it is. The problem is, or the idea behind this, back in the days when the storage, the OSD layer was developed, it was developed against spinner disks because this was the thing back in the days. In the meanwhile, everyone is talking about all flash, obviously, because it's getting cheaper and cheaper every nowadays. And there is a new project which is called Crimson, which refactors the OSD stack more or less completely to base or to keep that in mind already, and which delivers already better performance compared to the old implementation. I saw some presentation back last weekend at the FollowCon. There's a Crimson talk, so if you're interested in that, just check it out. Multi-site, which is mainly about S3 management capabilities, so including tiering across different pools, for example. That's what multi-site is about. And last but not least, what Thorsten already talked about briefly, containers. So underneath the ecosystem, this is just a word for Kubernetes, Rook, and the whole integration here. Let's get directly into the features. The most noticeable feature change in Nautilus was the, in quotes, newly added dashboard. The first version of the dashboard was added in with Luminous already, but it was a read-only version. In the meanwhile, this was heavily improved with management capabilities and whatnot. This is how it looks like in the meanwhile. For those of you who have seen maybe the Luminous version already, looks a little bit different. And because I thought, I don't know, just boring pictures, let's see. Okay, now it's working. I prepared a quick, just 1 minute presentation. That's the dashboard. I won't show you everything, but just that you have a clear idea. You have some top menu items. This is, for example, how the OST tab looks like. You get an overview of the OSDs with some details underneath. We have some fancy overlay. If you go over those little dots there, we can set cluster-wide OSD flex, for example, like no in. So there's no need to go back to the CLI and console anymore. I want to show you also the RBD tab, where we can create, delete, edit RBDs, also create snapshots of it. There is already an existing snapshot, which you may see. And last but not least, the pool tab. So as I said, just a quick rough overview. And one thing that has noticeably changed, for example, is the Grafana integration underneath. So that's integrated in all the various tabs and views in the dashboard. But I thought maybe some, I don't know, moving pictures are more interesting than just some static images. As I said already, the dashboard heavily evolved. It's now built in into Ceph. So as soon as you just install the Ceph package itself and you set up a cluster, it's already there. The only thing you have to do is you have to enable the dashboard module. It's a manager module, and then it's up and running. That's everything that's needed. It has, as you've already seen, a lot of more management functionality. We'll talk about them in a bit. Metric and reporting. What I used here at the back end to collect the data was Prometheus, and then to visualize it in the dashboard was Grafana. And yeah, what the outlook is, the whole hardware deployment, service management, that's work in progress. In further details, new functionality, we now support multiple user and roles. In the past, a lot of folks requested stuff like, we would like to have a read-only user, for example, for our monitoring team or for other purposes. And that's what we implemented there. We ship with some default roles, like an administrator, RBD manager, read-only user, for example. And if you grant your user with just those specific permissions, then he will only see, for example, those specific tabs or can only edit those things. We also integrated XAML V2 for SSO, single sign-on. We embedded the auditing log into the dashboard. You have seen already the new landing page. We also, which is quite cool, translated the whole UI into, I don't know, 7 or 8 languages in the meanwhile, hopefully more to come. So in case if there is a language that you are capable of and you would like to contribute, that would be the easiest way. We're using TransFX, so that's rather easy to contribute to the community. And on top of that, we're making use of Swagger, which gives us now a nice and I would say fancy way for our REST API documentation. OSD management, you've seen it already, setting all the various flags, for example, in OSDs. We can also set, for example, recovery profiles in the meanwhile in the UI. So if you have ongoing recovery in your cluster, for example, you can switch between, I think, low, medium, and high performance-wise, so it don't impact your cluster that much. We have a config settings editor. So yeah, seriously, any config option that can be set on a CLI can also be set in the UI. So still, you have to know what you're doing, I know, but that's one step forward. We can manage the pools. We can manage erasure-coded pool files. Also, lately, RBD mirroring configuration was added to the UI. So there's no need to do this on the CLI anymore. You can just adding your peer in the UI and then create your RBD mirror on top, which is really nifty. And you've seen the Grafana dashboards right now already, so you have a clue how this is supposed to look like. We still have a crush map viewer like we had already in the old days. It's still a viewer, nothing else, just visualize the crush map. There's more to come. NFS management, we can do iSCSI target management, which in the meanwhile was replaced, at least SUSE side, with Ceph iSCSI. In the past releases, we used LRBD. We now switch to Ceph iSCSI. We support QoS. We can also manage the modules in the UI and Prometheus alerting in the meanwhile. I think, as you can see, there are a lot of stuff went into the UI, a lot of progress that we've made. A lot of the effort was, to be honest, to reach feature parity with the old UI that we had, apart from the Ceph dashboard, which was called OpenEdic. In the meanwhile, we are already ahead, and now I guess we have a good foundation to bound on and to start off, and now there's more to come. Another management change, already talked about it briefly, is you can call it the orchestrator sandwich. It's more or less the orchestrator abstraction. The idea behind is to have a single abstraction layer where, for example, the CLI and a dashboard could talk to. Nevertheless, if underneath the deployment tool is ROC, Ceph Ansible, DeepSea, or SSH, for example, so the commands should always be the same, and you could add other orchestrators to it if you would like. That's exactly what we're currently working on, and that's also the foundation for the Ceph CLI, or at least the baseline for a unified Ceph CLI, so to say. What it can do in the meanwhile, it could fetch your node inventory, it could create and destroy some daemons, it could also blink your device LEDs in case it's configured correctly, but it's there. And on top of that, you have the unified CLI, so you have a Ceph orchestrator command, and then behind you can do things like device, as you can see here, device LS, and then the node, OSD create, and there are many more, so you have a unified UI. And I think that's what I talked already in the dashboard section about. The idea is to integrate those service management into the UI in the future. So to soon or later move away as much as we can from the CLI to the dashboard. So in case you would like to use it, you can use the dashboard. If you would like to use the CLI, yeah, you're free to use the CLI as well. One of the biggest Rados features that came with Nautilus, I'm not sure how many of you have dealt with the PGNUM already in the past. In case you've ever deployed a Ceph cluster, I imagine you had to deal with it at least once. There's a way to calculate the best PGNUM for your current pool that you would like to create, for example, but the problem in the past was you could always increase the number of placement groups, but you could never decrease the number of placement crews. So in case your number were too high and you would like to decrease your number, the only way out of it was to create a whole new pool and to migrate your data. And this, or this whole black magic now more or less disappeared, because now we can reduce the PGNUM as well, which is really, really cool. And on top of that, there's a way to do this automatically. So you can turn on a manager module, which then at the end takes care of all of it, so you don't have to worry about it. To be honest, that's something the whole PG calculation and also that people had to worry about, I think that's something that should have never been exposed to the end user. So I think that's the right way of handling it, and it will improve even further in the future. So that's really, really cool. What else do we have? We're now collecting smart data of our underlying OSTs, so this at the end, and reporting them back to the managers, and can take a look at the output there. On top of that, there is a module which was mainly driven and developed by ProfitStore, and it does some calculation and failure prediction on top of that. So if you enable that module, it will scrape your smart data, and then it looks for some specific errors and error count and whatnot, and then it will predict, okay, your disk is going to fail, let's say in 5 weeks from now, roughly, or in 2 months, or let's say in 5 days, and you should replace it soon. There is a built-in mode, but on top of that, of course, because it was developed by a third-party vendor, there's also the cloud mode that they're hosting in their environment, and then you're, I don't know, sending the data to their nodes. And they told us, I never tried it myself, that this has a higher accuracy and is absolutely, I think, the best thing you can get out of it. One version is free, the other one is paid. But as I said, you could also make just use of the local one. How does this handle at the end? You can just raise some alerts, for example, that something is going to fail, or you can also turn it on that this OSD will automatically mark as out before the disk even crashes. CLI command looks like that, for example. If you do Ceph device ls, then you get an output like that. And there, for example, you get, as I told, 5 weeks from now, 5, 8 days. So this one should be replaced rather soon. And same here. So you get some prediction, which is really nice. Crash reports. In the past, if a service in Ceph failed, you didn't even notice, to be honest. It was automatically more or less restarted, and then the logs were stored somewhere on this node, and you just had no clue that something happened when it came back on a Monday morning. What it does now, all the log files are stored under /volib/ceph/crash. Directory path, and then those are also synced to the mons /manager here, and there you could do something like a Ceph crash info, and there you get all the details on what happened. That's more or less a request to all of you. There is a module which is called telemetry module. What it does, it just takes those crash reports and uploads them to the community. But you don't have to be worried. It's just about some basic information, the current installed Ceph version, how your structure looks like, so no critical and confidential data. The idea behind is that we get more predictable and better crash reports, so we can, I don't know, fix things that are out there that we are not aware of. So that's just a warm request. If you have anything like a development cluster or something else ongoing, would be cool to get some reports. If not, even better than nothing crash, but to be honest, I think there's something going to fail. That's enough for management. Let's switch to Rados. Again, more or less, because I already talked about the biggest feature, but that's the one the PG num reducing feature. But I think that was also meant to be a management feature. From a pure Rados perspective, it's the newest thing is the Messenger V2. What is it? Sounds interesting. Between the Ceph daemons, there is a protocol used, how they communicate with each other, and the problem was that protocol wasn't encrypted at all, and it wasn't even possible to encrypt it. And the main driver for the Messenger V2 was that everyone asked about, okay, I would like to encrypt that communication between my daemons on the various nodes, maybe 100 of them, so isn't there a way to do that? Yeah, now with Nautilus, there is a way to do that, and it's called Messenger V2. The cool thing is, the idea behind this, that we also support dual stack like IPv4 and IPv6. That's not fully complete yet. So right now you can either choose between 4 or 6, but it's in the last stretch. We also moved the monitor port to 3300, so the IANA port that we got already a while ago. And you don't have to worry. We have a dual support for the old web messenger and the new messenger version. So if you upgrade, for example, the new monitors, they will just listen on the other port as well. And if you have daemons that could connect to the new one already, they will do. And if they won't, they will just connect to the old port and Messenger V1. Some other Rados improvements. You can now set the OSD target memory, which is really cool, because in the past it was kind of complicated to say how much memory will be used at the end by the OSD daemons, so now you can limit it. We also added NUMA support. You can now pin various OSD daemons to specific NUMA nodes. On top of that, we have now improved the centralized config management, what does it mean? In the past, you had to store the ceph.conf file on all the various nodes, and now those just need to be stored on the monitors and can be managed from there. So that's also really cool because it's stored within an object. Progress bars was also something that was heavily requested because there are a lot of long-running tasks in a Ceph cluster, at least that could happen. And the problem in the past was you just clicked on do it, or for example in the dashboard, or you did a command on the CLI, and then it just disappeared, and you had no clue what's going on. With Ceph progress, which also is reflected in the Ceph-S status, which is a Ceph status, you get now output of it, so you know what's going on, at least for the most critical things. Minor fix, not sure if someone ran into that already. Misplaced is no longer a health warning. Someone asked me, why is that a thing to name on stage? To be honest, that's the thing because we had some customers who had the problem that they were on duty over the weekend, 24/7, and if on a Sunday morning or Saturday evening, the cluster switched to a health warning just because of a misplacing, they told us all the time, really seriously, I could fix that on Monday as well, but now my boss called me to fix it right now. That's the reason we can now turn it off. If you still like it, there's a flag, you can enable it again. PluStore improvements, so switch to the next one. PluStore has a new bitmap allocator, which also more or less falls in the same direction like what the improvements on the OSD side were. You can now have a more predictable memory utilization. I think that's what everyone is requesting. And less fragmentation, which is the result out of it. We now have could make use of an intelligent caching. So the memory allocation between different caches like the RocksDB cache and all nodes in the data can be adjusted automatically, which is rather cool. We get a per pool utilization metrics, which is rather helpful, and also just bubbles up again to this FDF command, and some minor improvements. With, I think, Luminous, yeah, there it is, with Luminous, there was a new device class map introduced, however you want to call it, and the problem was, before Nautilus, if you would like to switch to, let's say, this SSD HDD class, you always had to change the crush map, and then data was shuffled around. And people totally got annoyed by that, because why do I want to switch if I then have to shift, let's say, a few terabytes of data, because it's not necessary. We fixed that, more or less, so you can now just switch to the new model without the need to shuffle any data. You can now set a hard limit on the PG lock length, which also is really cool, because in some specific situation, this just led to uncontrolled memory utilization. So there was a bug, and it's now more or less fixed by that. And there is a new erasure code way, which is called erasure code, clay erasure. And they promised a better recovery efficiency. So the bandwidth between I/O during the usage between bandwidth and I/O during recovery should be much better. Can't tell because I haven't tested, but that's what they at least promised. RTW, what do we have there? In RTW, we can now create different zones where you could, for example, notify and listen on. This sets up an event stream you could subscribe to, for example, which you could use for, let's say, also things like a function as a service, for example, a specific object was placed, changed, whatever, then something else could be triggered, so you can listen to it. We now have an archive zone, which can be used. So your whole data will be cloned, and there's a copy of your clone, but with versionizing on top, so every change of your object will be tracked there in a versionized way, which is really nice. And on top of that, we have the possibility to create different tiers. So as I said, let's say you have an HDD spinner, SSD, NVMe, and on top of that an archival zone. Your objects could move, depending on your rules, through all of those tiers. So that's another step forward. And the Beast front end, or the RGW front end changed again. First of all, it was Apache, then it was Civitweb, and now it was replaced by Beast. Again, as I said, of course, better performance efficiency in everything. What else? Why should we change? Let's see. RBD, I think that's really interesting. The next feature for everyone uses a Ceph cluster underneath his or their virtual machine environment. We now support RBD live migration, which is really cool. So you can migrate an RBD from one pool to another. In the past, that wasn't possible. If you create a pool, an RBD in a specific pool, you are bound to it. And now you can just live migrate between different pools, even between replicated and erasure coded pools. I think that's a big step forward. Another improvement is the RBD top command. If you ever used any top command, you know what I'm talking about, how this is supposed to look like. There you get some output and statistics about your RBD device, obviously. The command on the CLI, as you could guess, is of course called RBD perf image IOTOP, which makes total sense to me, because why shouldn't I call it RBD top if I could put perf image IOTOP? Yeah, nevertheless, hopefully that will change. So if you would like to give it a try, because we had some requests already, I think a couple of while ago in the IRC channel that I remember, where someone asked, didn't you add the RBD top command? We said, yes, it's there. I tried it, but my shell always tells me unknown command. That's not where is it? And then we told him, yeah, obviously it's called RBD perf image IOTOP. That doesn't make sense to you? No. As you can see here, what you would expect, some of the read and write IOPS, read and write bytes, same with latency. So this improves also the statistics of RBDs and was something that was requested by day one, more or less. RBD MISC. As I talked already briefly about the RBD mirror functionality that was added to the dashboard, the main reason this is now easily possible was due to some changes that were made in Nautilus and also the configuration changes on a central place that makes it really easy compared to older versions. Post Nautilus, we now support namespaces, so you can create security domains within pools and lock specific clients into it, which is really nifty. We also support pool level overrides. In the past, for example, you were capable of setting activating the caching on an RBD device, for example, and now you can also do this on the pool level. And the RBD ls command sounds like just a minor thing, but now also lists the creation, access, and modification timestamp, which is again really helpful for administrators. Enough of that, let's go to CephFS. What do we have there? Yay, multi-FS volume support is stable now. What does it mean? You can now have multiple CephFS file system within your Ceph cluster. Each of them have their independent set of RAID off pools and MDSs. So that's something you have to be aware of, but at least it's possible and it's called stable now with Nautilus. We have a sub-volume concept, which was mainly copied from the Manila OpenStack driver into now the Ceph manager. So we can now create sub-volumes with their own quota, own CephX user keys, restrictions, and all of that. So that's also really cool. And again, the unified CLI, so you now have CephFS volume, CephFS sub-volume to fiddle around with those things, which is really handy. On top of that, if you would like to use NFS, obviously we're using NFS Ganesha and we're now supporting active-active deployment. Please don't get confused by active-active or active-passive. That doesn't mean that you can only have one active and one passive or one active and one active. In this case, this only means, okay, multiple active or just one active and multiple passive ones. So that's not bound to just two nodes. So in case you're wondering about that, because I had this question already. We are now handling, thanks to more or less Jeff, a lot of changes that he made, and there's a really good talk from the DEF CON in Czech. Check it out, a really good talk where he talks about that briefly and in detail. So if you're interested in those changes, I can just recommend the talk from Jeff Layton. The NFS Ganesha daemons are fully managed via the new orchestrator interface. So first of all, orchestrator interface at the end talks to the NFS Ganesha daemons. This is already fully integrated into Rook, for example, and others are to follow. Let's see who then is next. And the sub-volume and volume concept I showed you just a minute ago is also reflected here, so you can use it on top of CephFS and on your gateways as well. CephFS shell, that was something, if I remember correctly, was brought to us by a student that participated in the Outreachy project. And this was mainly used, or the idea behind was for scripting purposes of CephFS. So let's say the problem was, for example, if you wanted to change the quota attributes, then you had, first of all, to mount the CephFS file system, and then you could change the attributes, and then you have to unmount it. All of that is now possible within the CephFS shell. It does the whole magic in the background for you. Nothing you have to worry about, so this is really cool. And on top of that, yeah, some performance improvement to the MDSs, so something you would expect from a new release. Cool. Let's get to the next topic, which is container. I just assume everyone talked about container already briefly over the weekend, because everyone is talking about containers, so we're going to talk about container as well, obviously. If we take a look at containers, then we have two different views on it, more or less. First of all, we could say, okay, underneath containers, you need to store them somewhere. We need some storage, so Ceph could be used underneath your let's say, Kubernetes deployment, and we'll put Ceph underneath. That's one way. The other way is, hey, we could maybe use move our services into containers for scale-out reasons and other reasons, and that's exactly what we are trying to achieve right now. The whole idea, I think, is totally clear, nothing I have to tell you over and over again. It's just to simplify the OS dependency and more or less the scale-out perspective, scale-out and upgrade. That's the main driver here. I think you heard about it already. Rook, maybe. That's at least the operator that we're using from Ceph side alive. It's really extremely easy to get it up and running. Even I was capable of setting up a container environment with Rook. So you should be capable to do it as well, obviously. It can already remove, it could already add and remove monitors. It could deploy some daemons on top. All of that went already into the Rook development. And I think it was 3 weeks ago, and I just checked briefly, and I saw that already a bug fix release went out as well. So I think we're already at 1.0.1 in the meanwhile. But the first official release was 3 weeks ago, so it's now also declared and named stable. But still, obviously, there's more to come and bug fixes, because now more and more end users make use of it. On top of that, we have already talked about right now more or less four deployment mechanisms. We have Rook, we have DeepSea, which is driven by SUSE itself, which uses Salt underneath. Then we have Ceph Ansible. And on top of that, now we have what they call the SSH orchestrator. The SSH orchestrator is planned to be the replacement for Ceph Deploy, because Ceph Deploy was deprecated. And I know that a lot of people are out there who really loved Ceph Deploy, because it was just the bash script, and you could just script yourself, because everyone is capable of writing a bash script. And the need to learn a deployment tool, not everyone is keen on it. So that's why they came up with the SSH orchestrator now. So you don't have to worry. There is something new you can use, and it's rather easy. The whole idea here is, again, to also integrate that again into Rook, and then at the end into the dashboard again, to have everything in one place. The thing that we're struggling with right now, and what we're trying to find out, is the initial bootstrapping, because we need at least a single mon and a single manager up and running to be able to start the dashboard on top, and from there to deploy all the other services. So it's more like a chicken and egg problem. So we're trying to find out what's the best way to bootstrap this, maybe to ship some pre-configured containers, just a single one where the first monitor would spawn, for example. That's something that's work in progress and ongoing. Community-wise, for those of you who missed it, Ceph Foundation is now a thing. What is the Ceph Foundation? The Ceph Foundation is a direct fund under the Linux Foundation. And the whole idea of that and the driver of this was, okay, we have, we still have two big vendors who are pushing Ceph apart from all the other community members, which is obviously Red Hat and SUSE. And the problem was, I tried it myself a couple of years ago to get some funding for a community event, which was driven by Red Hat, and I failed internally because we're not willing to send some money to the Reddish folks, and on the other hand, they had the same problem, they can't send any money to us. I think it's just forbidden on their bank accounts, I don't know. But the solution to all of that is the Ceph Foundation, which is independent now, and they had 31 founding member organizations, and in the meanwhile, three more members have joined, and there you give your money, and they will make the best use of it for community events. For right now, they think about hiring, for example, someone dedicated for documentation, because everyone is complaining about the Ceph documentation is so horrible. Yeah, it's documented in code. I don't get it. But yeah, nevertheless, they're trying to find someone. The same, the idea is to split the community role. They have a community manager, which is right now based in the US. So the problem is our community events, as you can see here, next slide, are spread more or less around the globe. So it would be easier to have a dedicated role, maybe in every region as well. And in case you would like to join one of those, next upcoming one is in the Netherlands. After that, there is the one at, yeah, obviously CERN. And the cool thing about it is that CERN right now has a maintenance window, and the Sunday before, so if you arrive already, let's say Sunday morning or Saturday, there is the possibility to, yeah, go down, take a look at the LHC and everything. So that's really cool. So I expect a lot of people to join that day just because of CERN and not because of CEF. So let's see. That's interesting. And then after that, we have the CEF day in London and the CEF day in Poland. If you're interested to host one, feel free. Those are completely driven by the community. You can just reach out and say, yeah, we would like to host a CEF day somewhere, let's say in somewhere in Europe, in the US. I don't care. Just send an email and we try to help wherever we can. And with that, here are just some links again where you find my presentation. It's the same I showed you already at the beginning. So in case you would like to read some facts later on, and if not, I will come to an end and would like to ask you for questions, if you have any. Or if you're just hungry and you would like to have lunch now, I can definitely understand that as well. No questions, which could be a good thing, I hope so. And if you have any, just grab me in the hallway. And yeah, thanks everyone for joining and enjoy the rest of your day.